According to Global Times, Putin said Russia is abandoning the use of the US dollar and British pound, as the US has undermined the foundational world economic system and the two currencies have thus lost credibility. Russian natural gas producer Gazprom and Chinese oil major CNPC will shift to payments in rubles and yuan for gas supplies to China, TASS reported recently. Myanmar also announced recently that it is purchasing Russian oil products in rubles. Experts said the move by Russian and Chinese energy companies, when fully implemented, will remove a large chunk of international energy trade away from the dollar-based international payment system. Also, the current environment with a group of seven countries trying to cap the price of Russian oil exports and a temporary shift in global energy mix toward fossil fuels. China's imports of Russian energy is set to see further growth. Jin Lee, an associate professor with China University of Petroleum, told the Global Times recently. China is the top investor and biggest trading partner for the Russian Far East. In 2021, trade with the region grew by 28% to $14 billion, and 54 Chinese invested projects with a total investment of $14.7 billion were used in infrastructure, energy, agriculture, or sectors related to the Arctic shipping route. Alex Cao, a Chinese entrepreneur participating in the forum, said the EEF brings together the heads of almost all big Russian firms and is an important platform for his company to develop business ties with. On account of the increased financial cooperation between China and Russia under the current environment, he intends to seek to ink a number of financial agreements with Russian banks to fuel the development of his company, which is in the agriculture sector, Cao said. Bilateral financial cooperation has seen progress in recent months as the use of Chinese yuan continues to expand in Russia. Big Russian companies, including Russia's largest gold miner, PJSC Polyus, and Russian aluminum company, Ryusal, have issued yuan-denominated bonds in the Russian market as Russian market players explore the yuan as an alternative to the US dollar and the euro. China's trade with Russia has surging 31.4% year-on-year from January to August to $117.2 billion in the dollar terms, data from China's General Administration of Customs showed recently. China's imports from Russia surged by 50.7% to reach $72.95 billion during the period. Russian Economic Development Minister Maxim Reshetnikov told reporters on the sidelines of the EEF that trade between the two countries is expected to reach an all-time high of $170 billion by the end of the year, on track to meet a stated goal of increasing trade turnover to $200 billion by 2024. The Russian minister added that these figures are confirmation of the joint work between Russia and China in many areas, including resolving export-import problems and ensuring the uninterrupted supply of goods and unhindered movement of goods through border checkpoints despite the current COVID restrictions. Many traders have abandoned the overland railway trade route due to uncertainty in the current environment, and as a result, the residential population of the small border city has declined by one quarter, Sun said. Also, RT reported recently that sanction pressure by some Western countries is spurring heightened demand for industrial capacity and said this could be a major opportunity for cooperation with China. The pressure by Western sanctions has forced Russia to ramp up its efforts to launch new factories and enterprises, said Eugenie Markin, executive director of the Russian-Chinese Business Council. Joint projects in the sphere of production of new plants and enterprises are among the most important areas, Markin told RT. A Russian foreign ministry official told media outlets in Moscow recently that Russia and China are exploring 79 deals that could amount to a total sum of $160 billion. The official said Russia welcomes investment from China, unlike the U.S., which treats such investment in a doubtful and hostile light. The EEF has seen the inking of over 150 deals worth 1.53 trillion rubles. China fielded the largest delegation to the forum with 205 representatives on site. And also, according to China Briefing, despite reports elsewhere to the contrary, Chinese Belt and Road Initiative investment into Russia has not dried up. It's just that it has flown under the radar or has not been officially notified. In fact, a plethora of new infrastructure investments have or are about to reach maturity, including in nuclear power, as well as other energy projects, the gas pricing of the planned Power of Siberia 2 pipeline via Mongolia has been agreed, now coming into development or online. Other important self-sufficiency-related intent comes in that China has agreed with Gazprom, Russia's main gas provider, to pay for Russian gas in rubles and Chinese yuan, shutting the US dollar out of one of the largest ongoing energy transactions in the world.
Aperture. Welcome back to Aperture. We looked into the life of Muhammad Iqbal from his birthplace in Punjab province of British India, now in Pakistan, to his academic studies in the University of Cambridge. Iqbal was a very learned man who was known for his political ideologies and philosophical theories. He is fondly remembered as a great poet and scholar. The political content of Muhammad Iqbal's poetry is one of the most fascinating aspects of his work. Except for a few poems, his entire poetic endeavor is tinged with the political concerns of his time. Both domestic and international political events shaped his poetry. He not only responded to political events in his verse, but also inspired his fellow Indian Muslims through his poetry to find a way out of the political dilemma in which the British colonial rule had put them. Stay with us as we looked into how Iqbal helped his fellow Indian Muslims aspire to a better future and guided them on the road to freedom.
Iqbal's message is addressed only to the youth. He calls them Royal Falcons. As held by Iqbal, the Royal Falcon has five characteristics. Iqbal wants the youth to catch hold of Falcon's characteristics as much as possible. The five good attributes of the Royal Falcon, as seen by Iqbal, are flying high. So Iqbal wants the youth to fly high for sure. The second attribute is keen eyesight. The youth can fly high only if they have keen eyesight. Its third attribute is that it does not build a nest, nor does it follow richness. The fourth attribute, it loves solitude, as it is a source of creativity. The last attribute, as told by Iqbal of the Royal Falcon, is it does not eat the prey hunted by others. Iqbal wants the youth to show these five attributes.
شاعری کے مختلف ادوار ہیں مثلا ابتدائیہ جو شاعری ہے
علامہ's poetry consists of certain periods
his poetry was at first as the poetry of the day
لیکن جو وقت گزرتا گیا اصل میں تو ان کی شاعری
he would say at that time my urdu poems are like a building made of clay
یہ جیسے گارے کی عمارت بنانا
Little by little, his Persian poems came into existence. Among the first Persian poems were the familiar secrets and the mysteries of rapture. Such poems end with Javed Name, or perhaps with What Can Be Done, O Eastern People.
Gradually, Iqbal changes from a national poet to the poet of the Islamic world. His versified story, The Familiar Secrets and the Mysteries of Rapture, is first translated into English by Reynold Nicholson and published in the region. Years later, his Javedname is translated into German and Turkish in 1957 by those who study Islam, including Anna Marie Schimmel. The book is published in Munich, Hermann Hesse. The German writer and a winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature writes an introduction to Javedname, as requested by the translator. Hesse writes, Sir Muhammad Iqbal belongs to three intellectual domains. His works are the outcome of these three intellectual domains, Indian intellectual domain, spiritual domain, and Western Thoughts Domain.
There are three groups of Persian poets. The first, those who are absolutely meaning-oriented.
Iqbal, as a poet, is highly accomplished. He has bridged the gap between wisdom and heart.
The second, those who are pedantic. Meaning is absent in their poems. They pay attention to words and nothing more.
His poems touch the reader's sensations. Because they are so meaningful and precede even the thoughts forming in their minds.
The third, those whose poems are full of both words and meanings. From among them, we can name Hafez and Saadi.
Such senses calm mind, imagination, and consequently heart. This is a rare attribute seen in such great poets as Hafez and Rumi. The attribute is common in all Iqbal's poems.
Allama Iqbal has mastery not only over words, but also over various meanings, meanings which come out of him and are derived from his thoughts. His meaning-oriented poems outnumber his other types of poems, just as Rumi's. Iqbal says, There is no comparison between the melody and me. Speaking is only a pretext. I am pulling the camel, which has no rein.
Allama Iqbal, with a faith in Islam and a reasonable Gnostic faith indicating his deep certitude in God's sovereignty, moves his mind to search for secrets and mysteries of the creation. In his Islamic Gnostic poems and such verified stories as The Souvenir of Hijaz, The Eastern Message, The Familiar Secrets, and The Mysteries of Rapture, he talks about the principles of internal ontology of things, an idealization of the existential world. While his thoughts are at the height of their powers, he invites Muslims to solidify familiar philosophy exactly in accordance to monotheism, to bring about a new perspective, a new worldview into the Islamic world.
So many memories are related to this house. My father came to live in this house when he was 11. Now, what sort of memory do you want me to tell you?
Talking about Iqbal's thoughts reminds us of the familiar thoughts as his central train of thought. We hear Iqbal saying, "To a mullah, a denier of God is an unbeliever. To me, more unbeliever is he who denies his own self."
Just ask, what is Iqbal's philosophy? The answer is, the philosophy of your own. Iqbal's philosophy is in fact the philosophy of one's own, or familiar philosophy. What is familiar philosophy? That you know your origin very well.
Never in my life have I been interested in the world's wealth or posts. I built this very house just to accept my wife's repeated requests. My wife's fate in this house had a different form. Here became a safe place for those in search of their identity. I clearly saw that most Muslims in the motherland had lost their Islamic identity, and to regain it, they need to struggle hard. The house, quiet corner, became a place for those who wish to fly faults of self-belief, something much needed by all.
The house originally belonged to my father, Javed Iqbal. The house title deed had already been issued to my grandmother. Upon the death of my grandmother, the deed was transferred to my father. Allama Iqbal would live here as my father's tenant. He paid the rent to my father every month or every 3 months.
Never did I lose my interest in my native land's people. My best time was when I was among people to see them struggle hard to earn their living. I was inspired by their uproar in the Anarkli district. Loftier than the heavens is the station of man, and the beginning of education is respect for man.
Iqbal lays heavy emphasis on the familiar secrets and mysteries of rapture. Familiarity, as seen by Gnostics, means to entertain the self, to fully know the self. It's a famous statement that knowing the self is meant knowing God. Iqbal emphasized, first and foremost, returning to the self. Search within yourself in order to know the self.
Iqbal invites us to know ourselves before doing anything else. Anything else. We shall heighten ourselves to become a human being, Paul excellence.
From God's own being, the self got a being so. From God's own show, to self he gave a show. About this shining pearl, I know not where. It could be then without a river there.
Iqbal meant to look carefully at human beings on the one hand and to look carefully at Islamic ideology on the other hand. For that very reason, we see Iqbal describing in detail the Eastern society and the essence of Islamic thought.
Who is a selected man? A selected man is the one who is searched for by God. He is in a form desired by God. God wants that kind of human being. This is possible only if man searches for himself, to train himself in a desirable way, to maintain the self, to try hard to fully understand the self. This way finally leads to knowing well the Supreme Being.
The greatest message of Iqbal, as expressed in his poems, is to know yourself, to turn to your own self, to know the East, not the West.
Signs of going senile can be seen very easily in me. The tick-tock of the clock shows clearly the passage of my life. So quickly pass opportunities. So little time have I to reach the end of the line. Oh, the memory of those days when time's sword was allied with the strength of our hands and unveiled the face of truth. Our nails tore loose the knot of this world. Our bowing in prayer gave blessings to the earth. From the jar of truth we made rosy wine gush forth. We charged against the ancient taverns.
इस घर की तामीर हमारी दादी की ख्वाहिश पे की गई थी पर वो इस घर में सिर्फ
This house was built under my grandmother's wish.
उनकी यहां पे बीमार
But only for 2 or 3 days she lived here.
चौथे दिन वो वफात पा गई. तो उसके बाद
She was sick when they carried her in a car. But she survived only for 2 or 3 days.
मेरे वालिद तब 11 साल के थे जब उनकी वालिदा फौत
At the age of 11 my father lost his mother. When my aunt was about 6 years old.
मामूल बना लिया था कि वो दोनों बच्चे वालिद और
My father and my aunt would come here every day to see Alama. Who was lying on this bed.
दरवाजे में खड़े हो जाते थे.
Alama called them and my aunt would come up to Alama and my father would sit on the other side of the bed. This way Alama would feel comfortable.
लेट जाती थी अलामा साहब के इस तरह वालिद लेट जाते थे
मैं उनके चली जाती थी शाम के वक्त शाम होनी तो स्कूल से आके
I usually went to see them after school.
मैंने तो उनको इसी आदत
Alama was always lying on his bed and resting.
मैं पास जाके लेट जाती थी तो वहीं पे सारे मेहमान
I was always beside him.
हर वक्त लोगों
Other people would also go there.
मिलना मिलाना مسلسل جاری رہتا تھا
اس گھر میں کئی لوگ علامہ کو ملنے آ چکے ہیں قائد اعظم محمد علی جناح
Many came here to see him among them General Muhammad Ali Jinnah Jawaharlal Nehru Muhammad Ali Jauhar and many other intimate friends of علامہ
علامہ صاحب اپنے بستر پہ بیٹھتے تھے اور
They would come here just before or after midday to have a chat with علامہ about topics like poetry philosophy or any other things
تو یہ علامہ کی زندگی
علامہ spent his last days of life here
وہ اس گھر میں گزرا
I was well aware that the main reason why India went under the yoke of British colonization was lack of knowledge of self and reliance on others self-awareness springs out self-dependence and internal richness know yourself Know your hidden parts, nurture your parts, and create a new world, which will compensate for old shortcomings and soul defects, to pave the way for comprehensive development. It is the self which originates existence. It is self-awareness which gives birth to human values. It is the self which affects existence. What human beings see or intuit is a manifestation of the self through mysteries. The form of existence is an effect of the self. Whatsoever thou seest is a secret of the self.
در اقبال آنچه که ما می‌بینیم فلسفه عینی هست. او فلسفه
اقبال's philosophy is objective and tangible.
بالا یا مابعد طبیعی در واقع
He pulls down philosophy from the metaphysical world to make it tangible and applicable to common people.
استفاده برای حتی مردم
اقبال's philosophy is therefore a practical philosophy.
اقبال یک فلسفه
It can be put into practice.
O Muslims, you have to preserve your own self. You must follow God and His book, the Holy Quran. When you achieve success in making your own self, you can resist even the whole world. No one can harm you. What is the basis of survival? Survival is based on making your own self. It is the self the nature mentioned by Quran. And this is the essence of Iqbal's thoughts. This is what Iqbal means of the concept of self. For that very reason, every member of the Islamic world should know this way of thinking, personally and socially.
Today we see a group of ignorant people who commit, under the name of Islam, the most heinous acts, though they are all against Islamic teachings. In fact, they are all Satan's companions and toys in the hands of those who want to mislead them. About these people, Iqbal says, Europe very well knows how to secure interests, while granting to this takes a loan of that. It gives sustenance to Satan in a way that leaves perplexed even God.
Nowadays, there are calculated plots against Islam. The enemy is very active to destroy the Islamic world from within. I personally think that we need Iqbal's ideas about Islam now more than ever before. You are simultaneously a learned man, a Sayyid, the descendants of the Prophet. But tell me, are you a Muslim too?
A Muslim is called infidel by another Muslim. It is not a non-Muslim who calls him infidel. It is a Muslim. All problems are created and spread here and there by those who are pursuing only their own interests.
The phrase which brings unity to you all is, there is no God but Allah. As Iqbal says, the key to our unity, salvation, and survival, and a sign of familiarity, is in this phrase, there is no God but Allah. Those who follow this phrase never behead Muslims. Iqbal's basic philosophy is that all of us should be unified. All of us should form one single family. Muslims should get unified to guard the sanctuary. I mean Muslims from the Nile shores to the city of Kashgar.
Iqbal tells us to put aside personal interests and to move into a direction leading to social interests. Put aside your personal interests. Let's talk about our religion, our unity. We will end in success. Just because of his thoughts, Iqbal is living on today. I think so.
Just have a look at the tragic events caused by a group of people who are Muslims in name only, as if there has never been a person like Iqbal. His philosophy has sunk into oblivion, as if Iqbal never lived among us. This is a great sorrow, casting a shadow over all Iqbal's philosophy and thoughts. There is no memory of him anymore. The light of all his great books has gone out. The Everlasting Letter, The Familiar Secrets, The Secrets of Rapture, The Persian Psalms, What Can Be Done, O People of the East, The Rout of Philosophy in Iran, The Eastern Message, and Reconstructing Islamic Religious Thoughts. During his last days, Allama says, As Iran, full of unknown meaning, I am unable to endure censurers' sayings. Neither have I any option, nor am I coerced. I am but a living soil, always in revolution.
Isi tarah jab aakhri raat thi Allama sahab ki to wo dono bacche isi darwaze pe aaye.
Then came the last night of Allama's life. His two children came to have their last look at him. Allama was still conscious. Someone from Germany had come to see him, a friend of his or his teacher. The German called the two children and hugged them. My father was leaving the room, but my aunt wasn't. She wanted to stay with him for a while.
At the time, I felt I had to stay with Allama and to sit there motionlessly. Our tutor, Aunt Doris, came there to take me with her. I told her, I will stay here at least for a while.
Allama told the tutor,
she knows that this is the last meeting between the father and the daughter. That is why she doesn't want to leave. Let her stay.
She knows this is the last time she sees her father.
And finally, I felt something was going to happen. For that very reason, I didn't want to leave the place.
Early in the morning, Allama passed away. The muezzin was calling out the morning adhan. Here, beside this bed, was standing his close friend, Ali Bakhsh. There were some other friends too, although most of them were saying their morning prayers at the mosque at that time. Back then, the mosque was more like a house than anything else. Friends were there to say their prayers in congregation. After their prayers, Allama passed away. His last words were the two testimonies. Then his soul flew to the sky. I personally suppose people like Allama will come to this world several centuries later.
Allama Iqbal Lahori died at the age of 61 on April 21, 1938, after a life of diligence and hard work. In the last moments of his life, he put his hand on his chest, telling Ali Bakhsh, his man, "I have a pain here." And upon uttering this ambiguous, meaningful remark, he bade farewell to the world. Many attended his funeral and accompanied him to his final resting place next to Masjid-e-Shah in Lahore. On his deathbed, Allama composed this song. Does a song gone come back again? No. Does a breeze come from Hijaz? No. There finally came to an end all those days of poverty. Does a Gnostic come back a second time? No. Allama's thoughts and philosophy will remain with us forever, only if we follow him.
Iqbal was a significant voice in the traumatic history of colonized India. His sensitivity to the plight of his people was sharpened both by his understanding of his roots and his adaptability to the demands of the new colonized world. Politics and philosophy were combined in Iqbal's poetry. Perhaps today, Iqbal's anti-colonial stance can be referred to as neo-colonialism is still plaguing the world. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In recent years, the United States administration has imposed a series of measures and sanctions against Chinese technology companies as part of a strategy to curb or delay China's emergence as the world's new technology hub. According to a new study by the China Development Institute, from January of 2017, when the Trump administration took office, to June of 2021, when the Biden administration passed the United States Innovation and Competition Act, the U.S. Congress published 209 analytical reports on China's science and technology policies. These policies include sanctions on Chinese high-tech companies, regulations and restrictions on advanced technologies for teaching science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. In this way, Huawei, as one of the most prominent manufacturers of Chinese communications equipment, bore a heavy burden, because one of the biggest goals of the United States sanctions has been to affect technology competition through the application of trade policies. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some of world media for further details. The Asia Times has published many analytical articles about this story and elaborated more about US's wrong sanction policies against independent countries such as China as a new world power in the field of high-tech advancement. In an article published on 2nd of September, the Asia Times wrote, "In another step aimed at stifling China's technological advance, the U.S. Department of Commerce has decided to restrict shipments of advanced graphics processing units, or GPUs, designed by American companies, NVIDIA and AMD, to China. The U.S. government claims it is worried about potential military applications of these products. GPUs, or graphics processing units, are a type of integrated circuit used in graphics and video image generation, high-performance computing, and the acceleration of artificial intelligence and machine learning. NVIDIA and AMD, both based in California, are the 9th and 10th largest semiconductor companies in the world, as ranked by revenue in 2021. The stock prices of both companies dropped on the sanctions news, NVIDIA's precipitously. After falling 12% intraday, NVIDIA's shares closed down 7.7% on 1st of September. AMD shares closed down 3%. Both stocks fell further in after-hours trading. However, looking ahead, these numbers make it clear that the semiconductor industry can no longer plan on selling its newest and most advanced products in China. Companies' growth prospects and return on investment may be reduced, and their share prices may thus test new lows. On 12th of August, the U.S. Commerce Department announced restrictions on exports of electronic design automation, or EDA, tools to China. This prompted Handel Jones, Chief Executive Officer of electronics industry consulting firm International Business Strategies, to write that such restrictions might have catastrophic impact worldwide, resulting in major disruptions of the global electronics industry. According to a recent report by Bloomberg News, under former U.S. President Donald Trump, the U.S. began extensive deployment of export controls in an effort to cut off Chinese technology champions, including Huawei Technologies, from key sophisticated equipment and software. President Joe Biden continued that effort and even expanded it. Given China's manufacturing prowess, as well as its prodigious and growing ranks of engineers, this delay strategy was bound to fail without something more. Just recently, evidence emerged that China's Semiconductor Manufacturing International Corporation had likely advanced its production technology by two generations, despite U.S. sanctions. But the U.S. has now put some offense on the field, with President Biden recently signing the so-called Chips and Science Act, aimed at strengthening the American semiconductor industry. But for the U.S. and its desire to stay ahead of a fast-advancing China, would it be enough? J.P. Morgan Chase & Co. estimates U.S.-made chip production slid from 37% of the market in 1990 to just 12% of the market last year. U.S. officials claim that may eventually change as Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo moves to deploy $52.7 billion for research, development, manufacturing, and workforce development. The New York Times explains more about the issue, saying, "The Biden administration has imposed new restrictions on sales of some sophisticated computer chips to both China and Russia, the U.S. government's latest attempt to use semiconductors as a tool to hobble rivals' advances in fields such as high-performance computing and artificial intelligence. The new limits affect high-end models of chips known as graphics processing units, or GPUs, which are sold by the Silicon Valley companies NVIDIA and Advanced Micro Devices AMD. Such products were originally developed to render images in video games, but in the past decade were widely deployed in the largest supercomputers used by scientists and by internet companies for applications such as recognizing speech and objects in photographs. Supercomputers are used in applications that include weapons development and intelligence gathering. Artificial intelligence technology is also increasingly being used for purposes such as identifying faces in video images. The restrictions are part of a cold war between China and the United States for primacy in advanced technologies. The Biden administration, building on limits begun under former President Donald J. Trump, has adopted measures aimed at restricting access by companies such as China's Huawei, to advanced chips and foreign semiconductor manufacturing. Moreover, a recent report by Japan's Science and Technology Ministry shows China has overtaken the United States as the world leader in both scientific research output and high-impact studies. According to the report published by Japan's National Institute of Science and Technology Policy, China now publishes the largest number of scientific research papers yearly, followed by the United States and Germany. The report said China published a yearly average of 407,181 scientific papers, pulling ahead of the United States' 293,434 journal articles and accounting for 23.4% of the world's research output. China also accounted for a high proportion of research into materials science, in chemistry, engineering, and mathematics. The figures are based on yearly averages between 2018 and 2020. Shinichi Kuroki of the Japan Science and Technology Agency told Nikkei Asia that China is one of the top countries in the world in terms of both the quantity and the quality of scientific papers that it publishes. Recently, US President Joe Biden signed the CHIPS and Science Act, legislation that would authorize more than $200 billion in research funding over 10 years to make U.S. scientific research more competitive with China. U.S. lawmakers passed the $280 billion CHIPS and Science Act out of fear that China was about to overtake the United States in scientific and technological expertise. But the recently released study suggests China was already beating the United States in this field. Chinese President Xi Jinping has prioritized investments in research and development in an effort to make China more self-sufficient. The country spent a record $441.3 billion on research and development in 2021.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Virtues of the Believers, Friday the 3rd of Ramadan, 1394, the 20th of September, 1974. In short, anfal denotes any kind of wealth that does not belong to a single person or to a single group of people, but rather is public property, belonging to the nation as a collective. There should be some management of this wealth. There should be someone in charge of it as God's representative. Who can serve this purpose? The Prophet, of course. So the Prophet here is not mentioned as a divine messenger, but as a divine ruler. And in times when there is no infallible imam to rule over people, it is the responsibility of whoever is ruling over people to take charge of these anfal and associated sources of wealth. In any case, these sources of wealth, such as mines, forests, pastures, and glades, are considered public property. The spoils the Muslim take from the enemy belong to everyone. The treasures of the kings are for everyone. These are the sort of things that are mentioned as belonging to the category of anfal. However, even though they are for everyone, someone has to manage them on behalf of Allah, and that someone is the Islamic ruler. Who is that? When the Prophet was alive, he was the Islamic ruler. After him, it was the infallible Imam, who was known as the divinely appointed just leader, the one in whose hands the reins of power should rightfully be. It is he who is responsible for the anfal and how they are used. However, this is not the part of the verse on which we wish to focus most of our attention.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
After God specifies the method by which the anfal are to be distributed, that is, in accordance with the Prophet's directives, he says, "So be wary of Allah and settle your differences, and obey Allah and His Apostle, should you be faithful." If you are truly faithful, do these three things. First, be wary of God. Then, settle your differences with one another and put aside your disagreements. For the sake of the truth, those who do not speak the truth will give up their claims, and disagreements between you will disappear. Also, do not become caught up in trivial disputes. Do not look for excuses to fight one another. The sort of people who fight their friends as well as their enemies are the sort who look for the slightest excuse to fight, argue, and bring about disagreements. Allah and His Messenger advise people that instead of looking for reasons to fight amongst yourselves, do not ignore the real reasons why you should fight your enemies. If you want to fight, fight your enemy. Why should you fight your brother? Why should you fight your friend? Set aside your disagreements and put things right amongst yourselves. These are the first two pieces of advice.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
New jobs data in the United States showed a collapse of 1.1 million job openings, the biggest one-month crash ever outside of the COVID lockdown. It's also the first increase in the unemployment rate since April 2020, and that has many so-called recession deniers being forced to reconsider. The United States has had two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth, which is the standard definition of economic recession. However, in an effort to avoid the negative press the recession label receives, the administration of President Joe Biden claimed that a stable unemployment rate meant that the U.S. was not in a recession. That's no longer possible. Due to the so-called Uberization of the United States economy, the official data has long been accused of falsely portraying a rosy picture. The national unemployment rate is 4%, but many say the jobs available are part-time, or lack crucial benefits like health care, or are poorly paid despite the current record inflation.
People looking for benefits, they want to work from home. People are not settling like they used to. It's just a matter of, I don't want to say laziness, but I think people are just, they're trying to get the best that they want, and companies are trying to hold steady and their wages, and they're not willing to pay as much because costs are going up for them as well.
Amid the backfiring of Western sanctions on Russia, many businesses have responded by cutting job listings, slowing the hiring process, and may begin mass layoffs. The widespread perception is that America's central bank is forcing a recession to reduce inflation, even if that means throwing millions out of work, out of their homes, and guts pensions, which are usually based on the stock market. The drop in jobs is the latest piece of data which shows a dangerously worsening economic situation for the average American. Wages are losing ground to inflation at a record pace, and an economically chaotic October could translate into a painful holiday season for many. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
It was the night chaos and violence came to England's Islamic Center as marauding crowds, intent on raising more than their voices, lay siege to the usually peaceful premises. More than a week later, there is still evidence of the violence that boiled over. Amongst the victims that night was a longtime Quran teacher at the center who was set upon by a baying mob.
Suddenly the people, so many people were there standing, started calling me and swearing and shouting, stay, and surrounded me. And the other people came, starting hitting me, kicking me, and swearing, just without stopping. And I couldn't understand. I was so surprised from them. So how can the people become this violent? One of them, he kicked me from the over my kidney, and I still have a problem with my kidney. I went to the hospital, saw the doctor, and my knee as well. So it just had a very big scratch in my knees and bloating. I still have problems with my leg, right leg, and I can't walk properly. After these 10 days, more than 10 days.
Said Mousavi is the director of the center and is leading the charge for justice.
The Islamic Center is following its legal path, and a case against the riots has been filed, and it is ongoing based on document and evidence.
Days after violence rocked the Islamic Center, there is still a visible police presence. And whilst those inside do everything they can to protect themselves and their loved ones, it's hoped that should there be a repeat of this atrocity, the authorities will do more.
Until those responsible are brought to account, there are still questions.
But why they did that in that time, I was so surprised. I think it wasn't only one group. I think there were very small groups of the people who were against Islam and against the humanity, and against the kindness, against... I think they were like this, some of them.
There is now a call for calm and dialogue as the only paths forward.
If you want people to listen to you and respect your idea, you should respect the idea of the other as well. That is why I want to ask them, please come and talk and have a dialogue with each other. And then with the dialogue, we can listen to different ideas. And of course, even in Quran, we have a specific advice that tells us you should listen to different words and choose the best. But different word, not different attack.